everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up even later with us. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue in the historic Tribune Tower building for a few more months at least. Roger Badish is in the 7th floor newsroom. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Well, hi. Good to be back with you, sir.
It's good to see you again. You were away last weekend at Cody's wedding, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Bridget had bought a new shawl and a new dress and everything.
She did. She was dressed to the nines.
Did you guys get out on the floor a little bit?
You're asking me if I went and danced?
Yes, sir.
No. But
so
then,
it was not an open bar. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was. Mm. Yeah, but she had a Pepsi because they were all out of Coke.
Okay.
And what did I have? I had a little bit of wine at the table. Mm-hmm. That was about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But she can't.
Right.
Dance with
I know you guys aren't going to get out there and shake your tail feather.
Well, no, she can't because of the cane and everything. She
Roger, just that's how you...
She walks.
Don't you remember...
yeah, I know.
What's his name? The dancer.
What's his name, the dancer?
You know, the famous guy. That when you're talking about dancing, you refer to this guy.
Gene Kelly. Yeah.
He did a lot of famous cane dance scenes, right?
Yes. Yeah, but he didn't need the cane to walk.
You don't need the...
Fred Astaire used the cane a lot.
Okay, yeah. Fred Astaire is probably what I'm thinking of. But, you know, you can figure something out. You can slow
That's right.
dance.
We left a little early. A couple of us old folks left a little early and let the kids...
Have the night,
and boy, did they have the night.
Yeah.
It was fun. But you're going to hear the full details, along with a few medical stories on the Brian Noonan show on Sunday. So.
Along with a few medical stories from the wedding?
No, from Brian.
Oh, yes, I know. I got asked to fill in for Brian last weekend, last minute, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what's going on?
He's
on the road to recovery.
He has posted on his Facebook page. He's home now. He's fine. He's going to be here Sunday, he says. But he had emergency surgery.
Oh, was it because of the wedding? Is it Cody's fault?
No.
Is he blaming? Is he suing anybody?
He'll blame Cody for
sure.
it. Sure. You know.
Why wouldn't you? That's what you do with your producer, Jess. I took that for 12 years from John Williams, and I get to pass it along.
That, oh, that's right. Yeah, it was always your fault.
It was.
Yeah.
And speaking of, John's son, Grant, is getting married in a couple weeks.
No way.
I'm going to the wedding.
You are?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Well, Colleen and I badgered the hell out of John to get an invitation to the thing, because you get to this age, you don't get invited to nothing anymore. I mean, seriously, we haven't gone to a wedding.
Really?
I don't know, 10 years.
Because all your old college classmates have been married already are never going to get married.
So there's some second weddings here and there, but generally those aren't huge things where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And a buddy of mine had a second wedding 3 years ago. That's the last wedding we went to. We didn't get to go to the church part because they had a small wedding. We just got to go to the reception, which I felt kind of ripped off on because I want the whole experience.
Sure, sure.
And then Kevin Richter, who just left Bill and Wendy's show.
Oh, that's right.
He got married a year and a half ago. Didn't get an invite, even though I was his first host here when he produced. Didn't get an invite to that. Mike Steven and Jenny Eck, who she used to work here, and they got married like 7 years
ago.
Yeah. Guess who didn't get invited to that one, even though I knew them both.
Are they trying to tell you something?
I don't know, because I would buy a really good... Jess, here's the thing. If you and Stefan get engaged, married, anything... Invite me. I swear to God, I will buy you such a good gift. I'll buy it right off the registry, something that you want, be double the price of whatever the dinner is. I will hook you up. We just need to get to feel young once in a while and go to a damn wedding.
Yeah, and he'll be asleep before the second song. Trust me.
I will?
You will.
Oh, dude, no.
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 If I ever get married, Roger invited too, so.
Aw, thanks. Thank you.
Roger, I will close that thing down.
I know you
my
will.
Friend.
I know you
close
will.
It down.
You're a party animal.
Don't forget that when I was in Nashville last year with my 22-year-old nephew.
Yeah.
Who left the bar at 3 a.m. and who stayed?
You stayed. Left. You closed
Darn
that place
straight.
Down. Yeah.
That's what happens. You go to a wedding once every 8 years. You just
make up for lost time.
Yes, you do. You will end up being part of a story that they tell at every anniversary for the rest of their lives, whether they want to or not.
Oh, man. So you're going to have to listen in Sunday night at 6.
So if any of you out there have a wedding coming
up. Oh, my God. Now he's getting desperate.
A child, a son, a grandchild.
Oh, my God.
Something like that. And you're thinking, you know, because generally at weddings, the problem becomes there's too many people. And how do you seat everybody? And
right. And who seats with who?
Exactly.
You know?
So here's what I'm guessing, Raj, is there's probably somebody out there who's got a wedding coming up. And they're thinking, you know what? We only have 6 people at this table. and we can't bring back the Joneses because that's going to cause problem with the so-and-sos we didn't invite. We just need to round out the, I just wish we had a couple of people to come round out this one table.
I wonder who that might be.
How about a Matt Bubala?
Really?
One. Yeah, because here's the thing is it won't be awkward for anybody else there because they won't know us. So it's not like, oh, we brought those people and they don't like them. And then,
oh, right. Nothing. Yeah.
I'm a talkative guy.
Yes.
I'll introduce people to each other. Mm-hmm. I'll let them mingle a little bit. If you want, we'll come up with a creative story of why we're invited. Maybe we're old family friends. Maybe I knew you in college.
Who knows?
We can make something up if you want. I don't even have to be me. I could make something up. We could be like a guy from out of town or somebody you rescued.
Well, you couldn't be you. You know why?
At some point. Why?
Well, because you're a big-time Chicago radio star, and if you went there as you, you would overshadow the marriage, the wedding. See? Everyone
would
come to your table and go, ooh, you're Matt Bubala.
They would be bitter afterwards about how.
They'd ask you for the first dance.
Why was that big-time overnight weekend once-a-week radio guy there? Damn! If I would have known he was coming, we all would have gone. Yeah. Yes, that's what's holding us back.
There you
that's
go.
Probably why I'm not getting invited to other weddings.
Yeah, they're afraid you
just
will overshadow.
Just too bright of a light for that room, sir. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bride has to be the prettiest and the center of attention, and you just suck all the air out.
That's right. That's what I've heard.
Oh, God, it's just such a curse, Raj.
Yeah, boy, it's really bad to be you, huh?
Something like that, yes. All right. All right, we got a lot to do on the show tonight.
I know
you're excited about it because Sim Shepard is in City Makers, the Culture and Craft of Practical Urbanism. How are cities being shaped today? We'll talk about that after the news next, 720 WGN. Hey, I guess I'm back on the radio. Is that what's
That's
going
you.
On
here? Well, you didn't go to a wedding, did you?
Not yet.
Okay.
Although the calls are coming in. I think
I figured
the invites
as
are
much.
Coming very quickly, Roger.
Yeah.
I'm speaking with Kasim Shepard, who is the author of City Makers, the Culture and Craft of Practical Urbanism, after we get to the news next on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN, 236 in the morning. Kasim Shepard is in studio with us. He's the author of City Makers, the Culture and Craft of Practical Urbanism. Thanks so much for coming in and being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So what is practical urbanism?
So practical urbanism is a way of thinking about a wider range of how we're making cities and transforming communities that goes beyond the traditional ways we talk about city making in terms of elected officials or power brokers or the people sort of at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But it also tries to not exclusively talk about just the people at the bottom and the bottom up either, but to really try and get beyond the binary of top down versus bottom up to talk about all the people in between who are dedicating their lives either through their professions or as volunteers to making their neighborhoods just a little bit better, a little bit more sustainable, a little bit more equitable, a little more just.
So this is really practical urbanism would focus on neighborhoods and what happens with, say, people building. Would this be like a community garden that then brings people together, a farmer's market that was created by the people within the neighborhood itself? Or
absolutely. Those are two really good examples. And I talk in the book about both community gardening and other sort of elements like that that are at the neighborhood scale. But I think it's important to talk about those examples at the same time as we talk about some of the hardworking people working as public servants in city agencies, oftentimes for decades on particular projects, to try and really bring both the work that public servants are doing, as well as the work that community members are doing, as well as the work that designers and architects are doing to make our neighborhoods a little better.
You know, I don't think we think about this very much because in a city like Chicago, there's, so many layers of politicians and deal makers and everything else that city decisions get made and we don't feel like we have much to say in it. I also wonder if we're just in such a transient world these days that especially millennials these days aren't expected to live in a neighborhood for their lives. So how attached somebody gets to a neighborhood, how much effort they're going to put into a neighborhood seems like it would be something much tougher to latch onto or to nurture than it maybe would have been 30 or 40 years ago.
I think that's true. I think we're at a time now where people are expecting to move around a lot in their lifetimes. But we're also seeing a lot of that mobility being something that's bringing a lot of energy to cities and has for over a decade now. Cities are cool and they have been for quite some time, which they maybe weren't in our parents' generation, where people are moving out to the suburbs. And now we have a tremendous amount of interest in wanting to live in cities and the dynamism that brings, trying to be around people who are different from us. And there's a lot of energy there, but I think we have an opportunity and the responsibility to harness that energy and that interest in wanting to live in dynamic urban environments for the greater good.
Is it so? That's interesting, because there is a lot of heat around cities, and the cities seem more popular. Now, I imagine with two types, I imagine 30, 40 years ago, move out to the suburbs, get a big yard, get some room, get to breathe. And now there's kind of maybe all these kids grew up doing that, and now they want the feel of the city. So I think, I would guess, I have no data here, you would, that millennials are moving into cities after college, and that retirees who have money are moving back into cities. So two different groups, but ones who spend a lot of money. And what does that do to people who live in cities by necessity, because that's what they can afford, because it's close to work, because they can take public transportation? Is that screwing up cities at the same time, or does it all depend on how it's handled?
I think one of the greatest opportunities that cities represent today in America, but also around the world, is that they are these great attractors, right? And you definitely have to balance that against the threats of displacement, the threats of gentrification. But I think there are ways to create coalitions. And one of the things I try to sort of lift up and shine a light on in the book is coalitions between newcomers and long-term residents, as well as other kinds of coalitions between designers and artists, between policymakers and people who think about infrastructure or our environment, and really try and harness that energy.
City Makers, the book, is about New York City itself.
That's correct.
And the transformations it's gone over what period of time?
Since 2008, since the financial crash.
Okay. And so it really focuses, like you're saying, on neighborhoods and small things, not top-down city decided certain things like that. Is that where the best things come from? Because when cities make decisions about areas, I'm assuming it's mostly about tax revenue, tax base, people doing this and that. Whereas the stories I'm guessing you're telling are more about people who love their neighborhood, who want to help other people out and build more of a sense of community.
Absolutely. I think that's right. But I think there's a real danger in sort of romanticizing exclusively community-led efforts. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the really sort of grassroots ideas I talk about here, you mentioned community gardens as one, which is one of the first examples I talk about in the book, in a very disinvested part of Brooklyn where I live. And while that is a sort of user-led effort, it wouldn't be possible without strong institutional partners. People buried within city bureaucracy who actually recognize that something good is going on and really try and enable that. And you can do that through a lot of really creative policymaking, whether it's just sort of stepping out of the way and letting communities make decisions for themselves, or through really being a partner through the resources the cities have, whether that's city-owned land that can be turned into from vacant lots into agriculturally productive gardens, or any number of other initiatives where you need a real partnership between the policymakers and the community members.
So since 2008, now New York was already doing pretty well in 2008. When I think of like a New York revitalization thing, I would think of the 70s and 80s, the HBO show The Deuce. Have you seen that at all?
So the Deuce, the pilot,
is on right now, and that's about the late 70s in New York, and it's very bad in Times Square, things like that. And now it's such a family friendly, and I love going to New York, and it's never going to seem clean in New York because it's too big and too old, right? It's just Chicago had the great fortune to burn down once and get to rebuild, so everything seems a little newer here. And you just have so many people in New York that there's only so much that can be done about that. But New York is really booming and really a great place to go visit. So since 2008, so there was a financial crash. How does that change, or how does that open up this area to start looking at the rebuilding from there? Did that financial crash really affect the neighborhoods of New York?
Absolutely. I mean, you saw there was when we started Urban Omnibus, which is this online publication on which this book is based. We were at the crest of this, you know, at least 6 years of a huge building boom ever since sort of we started rebuilding after September 11th.
Right.
And you had in the neighborhood where I live, you know, huge high rises going up that were supposed to be luxury condos, and the market crashed and they became, you know, please live here, rent 6 months free.
Yeah.
But even beyond the sort of real estate crisis that created, the crisis that it created for employment, particularly in the design community where a lot of these stories originate, you had a lot of people unemployed. You had a lot of people laid off from their jobs in nice architecture firms. No one was hiring them to make, you know, million-dollar lofts anymore.
Being built.
And so what that unleashed upon the city was a tremendous amount of creative energy for people to pay attention to what was going on in their own backyard. So you do have the community garden stories, but you also have stories of people doing things like setting up pop-up miniature golf courses in their vacant lots as well. I mean, that's sort of a flip example, but it speaks to a deep desire, I think, that people really have, even if they're not in those neighborhoods for generations, right, like you mentioned, to really try and get out there and do something together. I mean, a lot of the stories, the one of the first chapters in the book is about new approaches to public space. And I think that when we're thinking about public space, there's a new desire now, not just to have, you know, beautiful large parks for throwing the ball around or having a picnic with your family, but also for places where you can do things together with strangers, where you can make things. Another fun example in the book is of these underemployed designers who got together to create a series of birdhouses along this toxic canal in Brooklyn, along the Gowanus Canal. And now that, on one hand, is just a nice sort of fun thing for them to do, make something pretty, birds fly by. But it also created this real sort of rallying cry that made it a lot easier to organize volunteers to help clean up this toxic waterway. And I think you see a lot of things like that where you have something that you intend for one particular purpose, and you really have to, it's upon all of us to recognize the ways in which those small scale decisions can layer upon each other to really build something much bigger.
Yeah. when you talk in the book about city makers, is that what you're referring to? People who band together to build things? What's a city maker?
A city maker for me is anyone who sort of dedicates a huge part of their life, whether professionally or in their own volunteer time, to making their neighborhoods a little bit better. But for me, that also, that's not just people who are intervening in public space and doing some physical transformation. It's also the storytellers, you know, the people who are telling stories about our cities, who are interpreting them, whether that's through, you know, art or photography or writing. I mean, I think one of the ways in which we make cities is through the stories that we tell about them, which again contributes to why they become these dynamic places where people want to live. So I think it's both those things. It's telling stories about transformation as well as performing transformation yourself.
You were mentioning that that people want to do things together like this, and it's interesting. I think it's an interesting time because there have been stories out about there's always a lot of stories about millennials these days, right? And there's a story I read recently or within the last year about millennials not being gatherers like our past generations were, like my Generation X, it would be. They're not collecting things. They don't want to buy things and have them. They want to travel. They want to experience things. So maybe they're not going to be looking for the house and the TV and the art or whatever that we end up collecting. They want to see the world and travel and do things. And I wonder if that lends better to practical urbanism, because they'd be more likely to want to get together in the neighborhood and do something together versus a generation that was a little more, we want what we want and we want to have our space and we want to have our yard, and maybe didn't live such a willingness to have an interconnected life.
I think absolutely. I mean, I think there's definitely, you see it all across the different sort of technological platforms that we're using right now. There's a big desire to share more and to own less. And I think I have a chapter in there on technology, and I think one of the big trends that comes out of that is how do we sort of take the good parts of decoupling goods and services, right? We want experiences without having to own something exclusively. We want to be able to share it. And I think there are some real negative aspects of that as well. And I think you see some real sort of challenges with the sharing economy when it comes to job security, for example. I came here in an Uber tonight and was talking to him about you know, how much he actually gets to take home at the end of the day. So I think there are challenges with sharing and with experience, and I think you can't sort of separate the economic argument from all of this. I mean, yes, it's true that millennials are less inclined to own things than maybe their predecessors were, but that's also, I mean, we have 20% or so less than our parents did, in real terms. And so I think there's a real sort of income inequality question there that also feeds into that. So yes, there are desires and demands on the part of young people, but there are also drivers that are really speak to huge economic insecurity that also needs to be addressed.
Well, the economic insecurity is not just, I think, that you maybe are going to make less. It's just the security of the job itself too, right? Because we talk about how you expect to change jobs 15, 20 times. That's partly because maybe there's a wanderlust among this generation, but a lot of it's also because you don't trust the job is going to be there, right? So you're taking the better job when you can, when you know it's available. I imagine there's, you know, you're not going to have a pension someday. You're not going to get paid by somebody for the rest of your life after you put in your 40 years. That's just not not part of it anymore. Tell me a little bit about New York City, because I've visited, but I've grown up here. And here in Chicago, there's definitely two Chicagos. There is the wealthier Michigan Avenue, a beautiful touristy Chicago, and there's the Chicago where everybody reads about all the shootings and there's poor and there's everything else. New York has always seemed, I'm sure there's racism in New York and all sorts of problems in New York, but it has always seemed to be such a true melting pot that all of the people mix together. They don't separate into, I'm sure there's separation into boroughs and things like that, but how does New York pull that off? Or am I fantasizing about how much
I think that's definitely
are
the dream,
way.
And that's definitely why I moved to New York and mm-hmm. what I love so much about New York, and it still absolutely is there. But I think there, because of the crisis of affordability that I know you're dealing with in Chicago, I was just in LA and San Francisco earlier this week, and they're dealing with it head on as well.
Sure.
You have a lot of that melting pot idea is really, really under threat, and now you have for the first time ever. New immigrants coming to the city who are going straight to the suburbs where they are sort of in more sort of ethnically homogenous communities. And I think the promise of the city, which was to be this great equalizer, is very much under threat. New York City does have an unbelievable, dazzling diversity that is incredibly stimulating to me and to most people I know who choose to live there.
Yeah.
But it is increasingly seeming like a place for the extremely rich and the extremely poor and not much time for anyone in between.
Interesting. Well, that's kind of the story of America, isn't it? That we always talk about the middle class is getting squeezed out. So you're either very poor or very rich, and there's not a lot of in between. Kasim Shepherd is in the studio. City Makers, The Culture and Craft of Practical Urbanism is the book. More about that next, 720 WGN. Nabu Bala with you, 720 WGN. Kasim Shepherd is with us. City Makers, The Culture and Craft of Practical Urbanism, tells the stories of New York City and the small victories, I guess, is that fair to say, of what's happened in New York, of grassroots efforts to rebuild little areas, little victories of urbanism, of people coming together to help build their city and make better things happen, not just counting on the politicians to spend the money or things like that, right? Is that a fair description?
Yeah, that's correct.
Based on a lot of writings from Urban Omnibus, urbanomnibus.net is the website. You can find out more information, but the book should be in bookstores. If not, you can order it online. Kasim would recommend your local bookstore's online selection instead of going to somebody bigger who's, you know, money will not stay within your community. I mean, is that a big part of practical urbanism, is spending dollars within your community?
I think we're seeing across all sectors a desire to sort of connect with the local in different ways. And yeah, that absolutely applies to where you spend your retail dollars, but it also applies to how you spend your time. And like we were talking about a little bit earlier, do you want to go out on a Saturday afternoon and meet up with some friends and strangers and try and build something?
Yeah. You could do that tomorrow or today, actually, at the Stony Island Arts Bank at 2 p.m. on Stony Island Avenue. So I was telling you off the air, I went to Mount Carmel High School, which is just a few 10 or 15 blocks probably away from the Stony Island Arts Bank. And it's been a very rough area for, I mean, I graduated from high school in 1990, and it was a tough area then. It was a tough area in the 70s when there was a lot of gang problems. And it has gone through minor rebirths, never like really, really fully come back. Now the Obama Presidential Center is going to be out there, and we expect great things for the area. What will you be doing at the Stony Island Arts Bank?
Well, tomorrow I'm really excited to meet with local city makers. I'm going to talk a little bit about the book mm-hmm. In this really beautiful, incredibly arts-led regeneration strategy that the Rebuild Foundation has done, focused on the Stony Island Arts Bank, but a number of other properties that the Astor Gates and his colleagues have worked on there. But I think what I'm most interested in doing is listening and hearing from people who come out tomorrow about what's happening in Chicago.
What did they do at the Stony Island Arts Bank? What is the regeneration there? It's an old bank. It's an old bank that was closed, I think, forever, right?
For quite some time, yeah.
And now it's an art gallery? It's an art space?
It is a community center. Uh-huh. It is a place that is a public space in the weekends. You can just sort of come in and hang out and mm-hmm. see this beautiful... and there's a restoration of the bank, mm-hmm. But it's also a place that has assembled a lot of collections of places that were at risk of being lost to history. I forget the name of it, but there was an incredible record store down there that mm-hmm. was about to go to a yard sale, and The Rebuild Foundation acquired those records, and now you can go and listen to them. They also have the entire library of Ebony and Jet magazine there, where you can go and sort of a, not a lending library, but you can go and research a lot of the sort of history of black culture in Chicago. But there's a lot of other fun things, too. They have DJs on Saturday nights. It's a really sort of exciting art space.
So you and I were talking off the air when I told you that I went to high school down there. I used to work at the Museum of Science and Industry. The Obama Presidential Center is going to come in there, and there's going to be this rebirth of the area, most likely. But the concern is that that means more expensive properties. A lot of people get pushed out. How important is it? And there are laws here in Chicago. I know in the reporting I've done for DNA Info, whenever these new properties go up in places, a certain percentage has to be set aside for low income. And if they don't do that within the building, they have to create that low income property elsewhere. And but that's the caveat, is you can, it doesn't have to be within that building. It can be elsewhere, which means that whoever's building in the area of the Obama Presidential Center, if they're not going to build some low-income housing, they can build it elsewhere. And so the low-income just keep getting pushed further and further instead of having a mix, which is, I think, what we would truly like. So we're not always a separated, segregated society. How important is finding a place for affordable housing within cities and within neighborhoods?
Affordable housing is absolutely crucial if we want to maintain the kind of diversity and stimulating aspects of cities that we were talking about earlier. And I mean, the policy wonky description for what you're describing is called inclusionary zoning, where developers are allowed to build a little bit taller than they would be otherwise if they include certain amounts of affordable housing. But that is primarily rental housing. Mm-hmm. And rental housing is, you know, not as stable as trying to really build equity within communities, because that's the only way you're going to guard against displacement, is if you find structures for people to actually either own their own homes or other kinds of alternative models. I talk in the book about things like community land trusts and limited equity co-ops, other models of ownership that can preserve affordability and create longer term tenure within neighborhoods. Because if you're just building rental housing, it is always going to be subject to those same fluctuations of the market. And so I think we need to think a little bit more expansively about not only how do we provide affordable homes, which might be rental homes or other kinds of homes, but how do we really provide equity, which is something that in this country we've thought of home ownership as being the only way to do that, which also was subsidized in extreme ways, which led to the growth of suburban sprawl.
I was going to say, so you're advocating for something that got us into a lot of trouble, not the way you're advocating for it. Like, you'd like, you know, lower income people to be able to invest in their community and build some equity. But the problem is these lenders that are going to lend to them are going to, you know, it becomes very dangerous, right? I mean, if it's not done correctly, if there isn't a lot of, say, oversight or regulation, and we're not in an area of oversight and regulation right now, at least not for the next 3 years. So there's got to be concern about how you can make that happen and not end up screwing everything up, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting you mention lenders. I mean, I think they're responsible for a lot of the structural disinvestment that we've seen over generations in neighborhoods in the South Side and also in lots of neighborhoods in New York. And you had those same lenders then a generation or two later, instead of sort of redlining and not lending to communities of color, you had them encouraging people to over-leverage their homes in ways that led to the foreclosure crisis, which is really sort of the starting point for this book, because it was a crisis of foreclosure that in many ways led to the financial crash that is kind of the starting point here. So I think we need to think way beyond traditional financial models, too, for other forms of building equity, and go beyond sort of the only way to build wealth within communities is for everyone to own their own single family home in the suburbs and then subsidize all of the external costs of driving and the pollution that costs and the highways and all the other things that have led to us kind of overbuilding across large swaths of our country, and really instead try to find ways to invest in the people who are living in communities over long periods of time and really want them to be better and want to stay.
So do you think when there's mandates for a certain amount of affordable housing that some of the mandates should require that it be housing for sale, that it should be condos instead of just rentals?
I think condos are tough, because I think that's not that different from sort of subsidizing single family homes. I think we need to look beyond sort of the traditional models of everyone having their own individual thing. We were talking about sharing earlier. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of new ways that people want to live together now. If we think about co-housing or we think about other cooperative forms of living that that get beyond the one person, one unit idea.
Well, that now it's radical thinking, though, because I can understand that with, the way kids are today, and they're so used to a sharing economy, and they're coming out of school, and they're really going to embrace that. But then most of them are going to get married at some point and have kids, and then that's going to be a whole different way of thinking. That are that, you know, are they going to be willing to be in such a sharing economy when they get to that point in their lives? So I wonder how sustainable that is. You know, if we're not talking, you know, you want them to build equity in this neighborhood, if they don't have an ownership role, whether it's a condo or something that they grasp onto and that really keeps them there, what does keep them there then?
I think it needs to move in even beyond property ownership to be like, what can we do to foster you feeling like you have a stake in this neighborhood and mm-hmm. feel like you actually are being listened to? I think in a lot of the disinvested and poor communities that we think about when we think about places that maybe could use a little bit of regeneration or new ideas or new investment, we often lose sight of just how unlistened to people feel in these neighborhoods because the decisions have been made in city halls or by developers who are outside of these communities.
Yeah.
And I think ways to create methods for people to feel like they have a stake is almost as important as a starting point than getting them to actually own a piece of it themselves.
I would imagine also getting people to want to be involved too, because if, you know, listen, I know in just my everyday life with your kids and whatever else you have going on in your life, you have a lot going on in life, and thinking about how invested you are in your neighborhood is probably pretty far down on the list sometimes. And when you say they don't feel listened to, they don't feel like they have parts of the decisions, I imagine they're not even necessarily thinking about that until somebody asks them. You know, I think a lot of people are just trying to get by day to day to day, and whether they move or not, they might like their neighborhood, might like their neighbors, but we're probably just not as invested as maybe people were in the past, because we're in just such a fast, you know, if you think about the 40s and the 50s, or at least think about what we hear about them, there was just more time. Your job wasn't 80 hours a week. It was 40 hours a week, whatever it was. And whether you were poor or rich, you just had more time for life, for talking, for getting to know people, for community to come together and help each other out. And that's just not the society we live in right now.
But I think that what you're talking about, and I think this also speaks to the, you know, the income challenges that we're seeing in the structural changes of our economy, where jobs are less secure. They also require a lot more time. You know, we are creating jobs in this country, but they're not good jobs. They're not the job where you can, you know, support a family on one income with a high school degree. We're expecting more and more and more time and more and more and more and more education, which means more and more debt, yeah. Which does, of course, yes, that becomes a challenge when then we're sort of also asking people to really show up to try and improve their neighborhoods. But I think that's also a driver of this deep desire to connect in different ways with your neighbors and with strangers, and to and I think we see it all across the board, a desire to connect and to really sort of try and push back against those sort of economic forces that are driving us into further and further isolation from our communities.
Mm-hmm.
People want to connect. They want to be out there with their neighbors.
It's fascinating conversation. City Makers, the culture and craft of practical urbanism. You can go today and hear more from Kasem Shepherd at the Stony Island Arts Bank on Stony Island Avenue at 2:00. Find the book online and in your local bookstore. And his speaking today at Stony Island Arts Bank is part of the Chicago Architecture Biennial. Thanks so much for coming in tonight.
Thanks
really
for having
appreciate
me.
It. I hope we talk again. All right, we're late for the news. This is Chicago's News and Talk, 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Let's get upstairs to Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up even later with us, everybody. We're in the historic Tribune Tower in the Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio on the Magnificent Mile. Joining us in the studio right now is Mike Kinch. He's here because we found him, because Kitty Corner across the street from us, I can look at it right now, is a very old Chicago building. It's now called the London House, and there's a hotel there. And there was a guy there a couple of weeks ago, what was his name? Eric Jansen, mm-hmm. who was here visiting. He's 44-year-old Memphis newspaper executive. He was an urban explorer, which is what Mike is. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Good. Thanks for coming in. You were supposed to be here last week. You fell asleep.
I was, yes. I'm sorry I blew you guys off.
That's okay.
I did fall asleep.
That's okay. That happened.
It was difficult
to
stay
understand.
Up this late.
It's kind of, you're 19, dude. What do you mean it's difficult to stay up this late? This is the time of your life to stay up this late.
I laid down in my bed around 11 o'clock at night. It was a long night.
Until you're old,
you know,
like me. Or Roger. He's even older.
Yeah, I'm real old.
Yeah, you're really old, Roger. All right, so we forgive that. No big deal. But you were talked about in the Chicago Tribune story as they're writing about urban explorers, because a gentleman was on the 20th floor of the London House, I guess out on a ledge. I don't yes. know exactly what he's doing, but he's trying to take some beautiful pictures, and he fell, and he fell to his death. And that happens from time to time. And actually, Roger, do you remember the story? It was, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. What is the building right next door to us here on Michigan Avenue?
The hotel right next door to us?
The hotel is is a very historic building.
Mm-hmm.
What is this building right next door?
I have forgotten the name.
Oh, God.
But we actually...
Did you look that up? What's the building right next door?
It's a hotel.
It's a Palmer. It's the Internet.
Not the Palmer.
The Continental.
Continental.
I think I know the story you're talking about. So, I don't know the name of the building.
So up on the top of the building, there's some very interesting architecture. There's like a... My son Jack, when he was little and come down, always called it the yellow ball. There's this yellow, it looks like a gumdrop or like a Hershey Kiss up on top. And there is a big like chimney up there. And the chimney itself, actually, Roger, I looked up last year because a friend was telling me, was a Zeppelin landing.
It's very possible.
Or something like that for way back in the day. Because that building was actually here right after the Tribune Tower was built. When I see really old pictures of Chicago, Tribune Tower, Wrigley Building, and that building next door were what was there. And so there was a gentleman, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, Roger, who climbed up there. I believe he was taking photos, and he fell inside the chimney, and he survived.
You're right. Yes,
I
do remember
the fall,
that.
But he ended up dying before they could get him out because he slammed his head, I think, as he went down. And so, Mike, we hear these stories about this stuff, and you know, I love when I see online the pictures from decaying hospitals or mental institutions or abandoned fun parks and roller coaster parks, things like that. Those are awesome. But I get scared to death seeing these photos of people, and you always read the headline about the selfie that killed somebody. So what are you out there doing, young man?
Well, I mainly do abandoned buildings. I'm not too much into climbing the rooftops and such.
Have you done that?
Yeah, of course I have.
How high of a rooftop have you climbed?
70 stories.
Oh, my God. You've been out on a 70-story building that you shouldn't have been on?
Yes, I have.
Near the edge?
I don't go too near to the edge, but you know, I get enough close to it to where it's gonna be dangerous.
Was that an abandoned building or just, there's not a lot of abandoned 70 story buildings
downtown.
And you should not have been out on the roof of that building. Was that a roof that people could actually be on?
No, it wasn't a roof that actually people can be on.
So you were breaking some sort of, you were trespassing in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. Yes. There are no locked doors, but.
They don't have a locked door?
No, you'd be surprised. You could go up there and just all the doors are unlocked. You just have to know the route.
Oh, man. So you go out there and you're taking pictures. But you stayed away from the edge. You were careful. But you don't...
Yeah.
It was, I'm guessing, night?
You could go during nighttime and daytime. I've done both.
But if you're out there at night, you can't really see. I mean, are you scared? Like, or are you very hyper aware of where you're at and what you're doing and trying to be
smart?
Yeah,
you have to be very hyper aware. You know, you have it is a dangerous situation. You have to wear grippy shoes, of course. I prefer to wear gloves, if anything. You definitely
because you don't want to leave fingerprints, right? Because you're realizing that you could get in trouble.
Not that. No, just for grip, grabbing onto things.
Okay.
Of course.
All right.
Yeah, but it definitely is a very dangerous situation when you're up there. You just have to be aware of your surroundings, and it's just like any other dangerous sport, whether you're dirt biking or you like racing cars. You have to know what you're doing.
It's not like either of those, because neither of those, I've never seen a dirt bike race or a car race where somebody could fall 70 stories.
Well, there are some stunt dirt bikes.
They don't go 70 stories in the air.
They do 70-story jumps. I've seen it.
All right, those are trained professionals who
know they're
planning to fall 70 stories. Not, hey, this might go bad and I might fall 70 stories. So don't give your false analogies. That's not. I mean, you're taking a big risk, but I'm not here to berate you or give you a hard time, because it is really cool, and I understand that it's probably incredibly exciting and exhilarating to be on the rooftop of a 70-story building. I mean, that is rare air. There are not a ton of 70-story buildings. I think if you were on a 70-story building, because I just did a story on this for DNA, if you were on the roof of a 70-story building in Chicago, you were on one of the top 10 tallest buildings in Chicago.
Yes. Yes,
because there's a 60 story going up that's going to break into the top 10, I think.
I just read that the other day. It actually looks pretty interesting.
And it got you thinking about other places you want to visit?
Of course.
Oh, God, dude. Be careful out there. Tell us what got you into this at first. What got you urban exploring?
Well, exploring in general, I kind of grew up with it. So when I was a freshman in high school, all my friends like to kind of go, you know, just explore places, you know.
Abandoned places or just places you shouldn't necessarily be?
Not necessarily, you know, like we'd like to explore the city at night, you know, mm-hmm. like when we didn't know the city that well. And it kind of grew into
going. Your parents had no idea you were going into the city, did they?
Oh, they
where did you grow up? LaGrange or something like that?
No, I grew up on the northwest side of Chicago.
Okay.
So in Jefferson Park.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So you were a city kid.
Yeah.
Okay.
My driver's license got a 606 area code.
Okay.
So.
All right. That's a big difference because, like, we live in the suburbs. My friend Heidi Stevens here at the Tribune lives in the city, and, like, she lets her kids come on Michigan Avenue. And I'm like, oh, my God, what are you doing? That's crazy. But she lives in the city. The kids are used to being in the city. And there's a big difference whether you grew up in the city mm-hmm. or in one of the
definitely
the burbs,
is a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
But going on. We just like to explore all around. And eventually, all my friends want to go to Damon Silos. I don't know if you've heard of the Damon Silos.
Oh, I know DNA did a story not that long ago, I think, about urban explorers getting into the Damon Silos,
yes.
right? And
yep.
there's a lot of photos.
Yeah. Even back in the early 2000s, it was a popular urbex spot, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. You know, people love to go there. It's one of the few grain silos left in the Chicagoland area.
Mm-hmm.
You could climb to the top. I'm not sure how tall it is. I think it's only 13 stories. But you go there during the daytime, and there would be like 20 kids. You know, people doing graffiti art, people taking pictures. A lot of Columbia students I would see there all the time. It was just kind of like a teenage playground, and all my friends and us used to go there. And
would the cops come out there once in a while and shoo you guys away?
Yeah, of course, cops would come out and shoo us away. And then eventually, this is more recent now, it became more of a well-known spot.
Yeah.
So more people would start to go there. So more cops, you know, kind of to shoo people away. And then eventually they kind of close the area down now.
So now you have to go through hoops to get in there. But you guys still are, aren't you?
I don't go in there as much anymore.
But people still do.
But I'm sure people still do.
Yeah. Interesting. And are you a photo taker? Or are you just are all urban explorers people trying to get photos of something incredible, or just trying sometimes to experience something incredible? Are you taking photos everywhere you go?
So it's half and half.
Okay.
Half, you know, like to just explore cool places, learn about their surroundings, the cities they live in, the history of it too.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half like to take photos of these places. Actually, you know, taking photos of the decay of buildings is. It's actually really cool.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. That's how I kind of got into it. At first I started exploring, and then I kind of went into photography, bought myself a camera, and then I became a photographer.
So when you go to these places, it's not just your iPhone, you're bringing an actual camera, a good camera?
Yes. Yeah, I have a good camera. I have a Canon 5D.
And does that make it more difficult because now you're lugging something instead of something that you just throw in your pocket?
Yeah, of course it makes it more difficult. You got to put in a backpack now.
Yeah. And what's your favorite shot? Where have you been that you captured the shot that you just still look back and think, man, that was awesome that I did that?
There was one building in Gary, Indiana, the king of abandoned places in Indiana.
Yeah.
It's called Horace Mann High School. It has this beautiful auditorium. But the beginning of the summer, someone, I guess arsonists, burnt it down.
Uh-huh.
So I was the first one to actually get there and actually see the entire burned auditorium, and I took a picture of me standing on the stage with a fire extinguisher in my hand, facing the burnt auditorium. I thought that was just a really great shot.
So how do you get into that? It's abandoned high school. Mm-hmm. Is there a fence all around it, or is it just sometimes these abandoned buildings aren't even blocked off?
Well, it's different. It varies state to state. So in Chicago, a lot of the buildings will be fenced off, closed off. They don't want people living in them.
Mm-hmm.
Gary's almost an abandoned city now. So you go around Gary and
people from Gary that are listening are going to call and be very angry with you for saying that. I know Gary is on
times,
but abandoned city might be a little strong.
Yeah. I that would be a little strong.
Yes.
But there are a lot of abandoned structures in Gary.
Yes, absolutely.
And the police don't have time to board them up, to continually board them up all the time. So they just kind of lay there. And actually in Gary, you could go and get a little license that says you could be in the buildings.
Are you serious?
As an urban explorer.
They license urban explorers in Gary?
Yes. Yeah, they have a list of the buildings you could go see.
Because it's a revenue source, I guess, for the city.
$50.
Well, that's smart. I guess I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, and you could go into the historic abandoned Gary buildings.
And, oh, God, that's fascinating. All right, Mike Kinch is in studio with us. He is an urban explorer. We're talking about the places he's visited. We'll learn more next, 720 WGN.
With Halloween just around the corner, it's eerie out there. But not at Gary Lang Cadillac. My personal friend Tim Martin is no ghoul or goblin, and he has been with GM for over 20 years. He'll make sure you receive the best price on your new Cadillac. No tricks, just treats. Jot down his number. It's 815-353-7491. Or better yet, stop by and visit him at Gary Lang Cadillac in McHenry. And just look at this spooktacular lease Tim has in October. A new 2017 Cadillac ATS for $150 per month for 24 months. That's right, $150 per month for 24 months. Stop into Gary Lang Cadillac or online at GaryLangCadillac.com. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
ATS is 24-month, 10,000 miles per year, $39.09 down first payment, zero security deposit, due at signing, plus tax, title, license, doc to qualified credit. See Tim Martin for details. Expires October 31st.
Hi, I'm Ed Jacoby, Master of Ceremonies from Hofbräu Chicago in Rosemont. Come visit us for Oktoberfest on Friday, November 3rd, a special night to benefit Oak Leiden Developmental Services hosted by Fox 32 Good Day Chicago anchor Natalie Bomke. Tickets include a delicious buffet of German food, beer and wine, a performance from the Oak Leiden Choir, and a silent auction. Support the terrific work Oak Leiden does for children and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities. Visit oak-leiden.org for Oktoberfest tickets today. Prost.
Okay, we talk Bears.
You gotta play the best 11 players.
Often we scream Bears.
You correct those mistakes.
Occasionally we whimper Bears.
None of us ever thought this was gonna happen.
It's mind-numbing.
But it's best when we cheer Bears.
Take it, it's real serious, aren't you?
You damn right I do.
Okay, so join OB, Kaz, and me, Dan Hampton, for the best Bears postgame anywhere, right here on 720 WGN Radio.
Brought to you, as always, by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Hi, I'm Margalite, president of Home Care Assistance, Chicagoland's premier in-home senior care company. I understand firsthand the rewards and challenges that come with caring for an aging loved one. In fact, my grandmother was one of our first clients, so I know that Home Care Assistance can help remove some of your worry and allow your loved one to continue to live safely and happily at home. We base our care on our exclusive Balanced Care Method, an award-winning program designed to strengthen the mind, improve health, and positively impact outlook on life. We focus on quality of life care for our clients. The Home Care Assistance care managers create a personalized care plan and match the right caregiver, someone who has the specific skill set and the heart to help your family member stay happy, safe, and active at home. You're not alone. Visit HomeCareAssistanceChicago.com or call me at 312-380-6716. I'd love to tell you about our quality of life programs. Again, that's 312-380-6716. We are Home Care Assistance.
Plan a day of fun and adventure with a trip to Goods Furniture in Kewaunee, Illinois. The Goods campus is three city blocks of over 50 brands of furniture with hundreds of styles. There's something for everyone at Goods, no matter your style or budget. It's time for the good life. That means quality furniture that tells a story. Furniture you're proud to display in your home. Browse the wide selection of good, better, and best today at goodsfurniture.com. Then leave the traffic and stoplights behind. Stop running from store to store in Chicagoland. Make the easy drive west on I-80 to Kewaunee, Illinois. Enjoy lunch in the Wine Cellar restaurant. Relax in their bed and breakfast. They've been doing it for 122 years. Goods is open every day from 9 until 6. Don't forget to visit them online right now at goodsfurniture.com. Goods, no hype, just honest to goodness value. Day in and day out.
Matt Babala with you, 720 WGN. We're speaking with Mike Kinch. He is an urban explorer or an urbex. Do you guys, what do you guys, what's the handy terminology?
Urban explorer.
An urban explorer. You've been doing it for how many years now?
2 years.
2 years. Oh, just so you're relatively new to the.
Yeah, well, photographing, doing photography for 2 years, exploring 5 years.
The story's too long to tell now, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the Edgewater Hospital and your adventures there. Let me ask you, outside of Chicago, have you, you've gone to Gary, Indiana. Have you gone elsewhere? Have you gone, like, to Detroit, I imagine, has got a lot of great urban exploration
yes.
right now, right?
Detroit's at the top of my list for places I want to visit. I have a lot of friends that want me to come out there, a lot of people who photograph the same stuff as I do.
Yeah,
they all want me to come out there, and I definitely want to see a lot of the buildings out there. They they have beautiful architecture too.
Yeah, I'm sure. And what about internationally? Like, I've seen videos before from Chernobyl. I think that would be fascinating to go through Chernobyl.
Yeah, of course. That's something that's on my bucket list. I've taken pictures in Florida and Mexico.
So, gotcha. You're finding abandoned buildings in Mexico to go into? That sounds like a really bad idea.
I probably found the coolest abandoned building in Mexico, though.
I believe it. But what happens if you get arrested in Mexico?
I haven't experienced that yet, so.
Yeah, I'm guessing probably shouldn't. Do mom and dad know that you're doing all of this?
Yes.
And they're cool with it?
Well, my dad yelled at me the other day for taking a picture on top of a building. But they're cool with me going into buildings as long as I'm safe. I'm with my friends. Yeah. I'm careful.
Do they know about the Mexico one?
Yes. Yeah.
And they were like, okay, that makes sense.
Well, I was on vacation with my family.
Were they with you at the abandoned building?
They actually came with.
Okay. Well, then that's fine. As long as mom or dad are there to make sure you don't end up in a Mexican jail, because I don't know how that's going to go. And you don't know how that's going to go. Oh, God, what was... All right, so you'll tell us all about this after the news. Let's stop. Let's take a quick break for the news and then hear about the adventures of our friend Mike Kinch. He's an urban explorer, and it's you see it on social media all the time, these incredible photos that people take from abandoned buildings and from high-rise structures where they shouldn't be. We'll talk about it more after the news. Let's check the headlines. It's 3:30 in the morning. Upstairs in the newsroom, there's Roger Battish.
Former President Obama's been called for jury duty. Cook County Judge Chief Judge Tim Evans says former president will serve in November. He's registered to vote in Chicago. Evans said that Obama's safety will be uppermost in their minds when he shows up for that jury duty. Spain's taken direct control of Catalonia and sacked the region's defiant separatist government by publishing special measures overnight in the country's official Gazette Online. Move came early Saturday after separatist Catalan lawmakers passed a declaration of independence on Friday. Wisconsin State Assembly is set to take up a Republican bill next week that would lift the state's nearly 20-year ban on gold, silver, and nickel mining. Wisconsin lawmakers passed a bill in 1998 that requires sulfide mining applicants to provide a sulfide mine has operated in North America for 10 years without causing pollution, and a similar mine has been closed for 10 years without causing pollution. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Take a weekend of Chicago sports with you on 720 WGN. First up this afternoon,
the Wildcats welcome the Michigan State Spartans to Ryan Field. The pregame at 2 o'clock, the kickoff at 2:30.
And right afterwards,
Chicago!
The Chicago Blackhawks, Colorado Avalanche.
I'm John Weideman. Troy Murray and I will have the puck drop for you at 8 o'clock.
Plus tomorrow.
Now we're going to do things right.
That's it. I'm done.
This is what you're going to get, folks.
The best Bears postgame. The Chevy Hemp and OB show with Kaz. At 3 after Bears Saints. Chicago sports and the Chicago sports conversation. All weekend on 720 WGN.
Dick, I remember seeing you for the first time across a crowded room. The owner of American Weathermakers. You couldn't take your eyes off me.
I remember it well, Elizabeth. You were standing next to that new smart thermostat we just installed that morning.
And I remember being so impressed when I heard you were a 60-minute man.
Yes, we're the 60-minute men. If you have no heat or no cooling, day or night, we'll be there in 60 minutes or give you a free $60 gift card for repairs. And we never charge for travel or overtime.
You won my heart when you said American Weathermakers offers a lifetime warranty on repairs.
Who else offers a lifetime repair warranty?
And the best pricing, too, on the top heating and air conditioning brands, every day.
And I do remember asking if I could give you a jingle.
I said yes, of course, but wasn't expecting.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
Call toll-free.
855-955-HVAC.
And I will always remember AmericanWeathermakers.com.
Imagine quality custom-ordered kitchen cabinets delivered in 10 days or less. Not 10 weeks, 10 days. Now imagine those cabinets at 60% off. Hi, Tom Janke of Builder Supply Outlet. Our exclusive cabinets feature solid wood construction, dovetail drawers, plus soft close doors and drawers in several beautiful styles. Nobody does it faster. And at 60% off, nobody can beat our quality and price. Nobody. Stop by Builder Supply Outlet today. Include a stylish granite or quartz top and get a stainless steel sink free. Our talented designers will even lay out your new kitchen at no charge. Installation's now available too. Hurry in. 60% off cabinets at Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day on every item. We're just 5 miles east of the Oakbrook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road in Broadview. Or visit buildersupplyoutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
WGN Sports, we've got football and hockey for you today on WGN. First up is Northwestern football against Michigan State in Evanston. Pregame at 2, kickoff 2:30 with Dave Ennett and Ted Albrecht on 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. And then the Hawks are in Colorado tonight. The pregame with Chris Bowden at 7:30. Faceoff at 8 with John Weideman and Troy Murray on 720 WGN at WGNradio.com. Hawks coming off a 2-1 loss to Nashville last night. In the World Series, Houston has a 2-1 lead over the Dodgers, beating them yesterday 5-3. Game 4 tonight in Houston, 7:09 first pitch. Bulls hosting Oklahoma City today. Checking WGN traffic, we've still got that Eaton's Spur incident. It's been going on now for about 2 hours. On the Eaton's Spur, an accident has blocked the Eaton's Spur westbound between Waukegan Road and Dundee on I-94. And that shows no signs of being cleared up anytime soon. The right shoulder is blocked eastbound I-94 at 91st Street, backed up to 83rd. And an accident blocking the left lane, northbound I-57 at 107th Street. Your travel times on the rest of the area expressways, tollways, and highways, other than what we've just reported, everything's moving along at posted speeds. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app, approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, cloudy, windy, high near 42 today. Sunday, we've got an area frost. It's extended not only from the Cook County area, but all the way into northwest Indiana. Should clear up by about 9, 10 o'clock Sunday morning. Otherwise, mostly sunny and breezy with a high near 46 on Sunday. Temperatures right now 37 at O'Hare, 38 at Midway, Burbank, and along the lakefront. Lake Michigan water temperature at 59. Winds out of the west at 15, giving us a wind chill of 28. Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm Roger Badish on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Will the super team from OKC fly past the Bulls, or will Markkanen bring the kryptonite? Bulls Thunder tonight at 6:30 on WGN TV Sports. Roger, you missed it last week. Before the Bulls had their season debut, and I probably shouldn't bring this up, Jess. I'm probably going to get yelled at. Luckily, we got away with this last week. There was a Bulls reader on Bulls on WGN TV.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it said, it's a new era for the Bulls. And I just started laughing, and I couldn't stop because it's such a great way to, like, try to, hey, we're really going to suck this year, but how about this? It's a new era for the Bulls.
Yeah.
So I kind of had a giggle fit that lasted about a minute and a half.
Oh, no.
I had trouble recovering from it. It was terrible. But then I tried to make it up and say that, hey, Neil Funk and Stacey King, well worth the price of admission, whether they stink or not. Because it's just like when Ron used to call the games with Pat here, Ronnie Santo at for decades here at WGN, when they were god-awful. Mm-hmm. It was still well worth listening to hear what Ron and Pat would say, right? And hear Santo tell a story or whatever they would talk about. It was sometimes almost better when they stunk because it gave them more time to have to kill.
And sometimes Ronnie would even say how bad they stunk.
Yes, he would.
He was not afraid to speak his
Ronnie
mind.
Ronnie was a big homer, but when they were really bad, he was also pretty honest about it.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that. So it was good to see the Bulls win the game against Atlanta the other night. We actually watched the game, and this Markkanen 7-footer who's sinking threes left and right. So, hey, maybe it'll at least be interesting.
And he, at the Hawks game last night, he almost got a puck through. He was shooting the puck.
Oh, he did the shoot the puck?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute, Roger, I'm talking about the Bulls.
No, I know, but how do you say his last name again?
The shoot the puck. Oh, Markkanen.
Markkanen.
I believe. Yeah.
He was shooting the puck last night.
I bet it's been a long time since they had a 7-footer on the ice shooting the puck.
They had to get him an extra
I bet
long
they
stick.
Had trouble with the stick.
I know.
Honest to goodness. He probably had to bend way over, feel like he was playing shinny.
He did pretty good, though. He just, like, you know how some people get there and they line it up and it's back and forth and back. Nah, he just looked down at it and he just, boom. He just, a little flick of the wrist. And each one, because you shoot three of them, and each one came within, like, a half an inch.
Almost got it.
Of going in.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Good for the Bulls. Good for them. So they got their first win. They're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be the greatest season, but there's hope, and hopefully they'll rebuild.
It's rebuilding, yes.
It's going to be it's going to be even more rebuilding with the Mirotic and Portis thing that happened. So we'll see what comes out of that. All right, Mike Kinch is in studio. He is an urban explorer. The young gentleman, he's only 19 years old. Can I say where you go to school, or am I going to get you in trouble?
No.
He goes to Northeastern Illinois, and you're a freshman, sophomore?
I'm a sophomore.
You're a sophomore at Northeastern Illinois University and an urban explorer. What are you studying in school, by the way?
Business administration with a minor in finance.
Okay. Do you envision urban exploring somehow being part of your future, or always just a fun hobby?
I'm not sure at the moment. You know,
You'd like to find a way to make money doing this, wouldn't you? Because you really love doing it.
Yeah, I really would.
So if you can find a way to make
really
some money.
It's a really fun hobby. It's a passion of mine.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to pursue the passion as a career yet, but it's definitely, I'm definitely thinking about it.
Yeah, very cool. So let's you were showing me some pictures during the news from a place you visited in Mexico that's really cool. But first, I want to talk about this Edgewater Hospital. Where is Edgewater Hospital at?
It's on Ashland.
Okay.
It's
where Hillary Rodham Clinton was born.
Yes,
I think John Wayne Gacy was born there. So it's a famous old hospital that closed down many years ago now. How many years, you know, has it been abandoned? You said the water
closed in 2001.
Okay. I don't understand how this happens, that a building closes down in 2001 and then sits abandoned for 16 years now. How does the city, and I know this happens at places, but how does the city not have a regulation that if you abandon a building or you close or whoever owns it has to either maintain it or tear it down at some point? You would think there'd be more regulation on that, so we didn't have. And I know that would be a great loss because there's good old architecture, but after 15 years, that building can probably never be reused. I guess maybe it could, but if it's had a flooded basement for 15 years and just the general deterioration of a building, I would think it'd be very tough to say, okay, now we're going to preserve this and rebuild this. Maybe you can. I don't know architecture well enough, but I would think that the bones of a building are taking enough abuse and wear and tear from not being heated and cooled and anything properly being done for 15 years that eventually you're going to have to get rid of it. But that the fact that they let these stand is good for you, but it just seems odd to me that cities get away with that.
Yeah, the building's definitely past its time. It has to be demolished. Can't really be revitalized in any way. The reason it's still standing is a really funny and long story. It's because the short version is, Edgewater Hospital is running. Their doctors were doing unauthorized surgeries on patients, telling them they need amputations, they need a kidney removed, just to get money from Medicare. And eventually Medicare found out, and due to all this fraud, stopped funding the hospital completely. The hospital only took about 2 months to go bankrupt, closed, didn't have any money to remove their medical documents that were stored there. So what happened was the state law says any hospital has to hold their documents for 10 years, but they didn't have the money to remove them and put them somewhere else, so they just decided to store them there, and they couldn't tear down the building without removing those documents.
And, okay, so the documents are still there?
So a couple years ago, they did like a whole news story on it, and the news uncovered that documents were still there, and eventually people went in and removed some of them. In 2016, I found a couple more documents in there, which leads me to believe there still are documents in there, but that the building I found documents in 2016 is now being demolished, so I don't think...
So they are starting to tear down parts
of it.
Yes,
they are starting to tear down parts of it.
Okay, so explain to me the building. So you visited there, and you said that there's so the building is several buildings, and they're all interconnected by a basement.
Yes.
And there's one building you can sneak into, but there's another building that's really well boarded up, and they have a security guard that you can't get into.
Yes.
Well, I'm guessing that's where the documents are, maybe? Is that why there's a security guard?
This was back in 2016.
Okay.
That building was the only one to get into. But the major pile of documents were stored on a library, I think, on the 7th floor of the main wing. Mm-hmm. That's the bigger part that I wasn't able to get into on my first try. But there are also documents in the wing I was in as well.
Okay. So the wing you can get into is connected to this other wing via a basement. Buildings, how many buildings were there altogether?
There are three main buildings. I think there are five buildings total.
Okay. But the three main buildings are connected by a basement?
Yes.
So if you wanted to get into these other two buildings that you couldn't get into from outside, you could if you got through the basement.
Yes, the only way through would be through the basement.
But the basement is flooded. You said it's been flooded pretty much ever since the building closed, it sounds like.
Basically.
Because they tore down a parking garage, the sump pumps quit working, whatever, the basement floods, and there's now like 5 feet of water in the basement?
Five feet in parts, 2 feet in parts, 10 feet in parts.
So to get to the other building, you waited until winter.
Yes.
And it was frozen.
Yes, and the water did freeze, and it took a little bit of finagling trying to find the right parts that were frozen enough to get over. But after a lot of crawling, a lot of walking, I got to the other side.
So, Mike, and this is where I say, why are we, the risk that you take. It's 5 feet at least of water that's been there forever, so it's full of God knows what. And it's winter, so it should be frozen, but you never know if things are truly frozen or not, especially inside a building. And you crawl on this. If people told you, yeah, you can get to the other side right now, did you have some sense going in that people are doing this now, so it's okay, I know what I'm getting to, I know what I'll find on the other end?
No, I actually had no clue find on the other end. I had no clue where I was going in the basement.
Did your parents know this part of the story?
Yes.
And they're okay with this?
They weren't at the time.
They shouldn't be.
It's been a while.
It's a bad risk to take.
It is.
You had one friend with you. If you fall in the water, what's that friend going to do?
Tell me to get out.
Dude, you fall in 5 feet of water, you might not get out. You don't know what's in that water, what your leg's going to get caught on.
Yeah, of course. It's very true, but I was very careful of doing it. I tried the first time I tried, I didn't actually get all the way there.
By saying I was very careful, do you just mean I didn't fall in, the ice didn't break? How are you very careful crawling across ice?
Well, you have to know how thick the ice is in parts. You have to understand like the concepts of how it's freezing, the cold parts and the drafts in the basement and everything like that. So some thought did go into it.
Okay, so you thought, all right, these areas, it's going to be thicker. This is going to be the safer area.
Yes.
You thought that out at least. Okay, I'll give you credit for that. You make it to the other side of the basement, and do you know for sure that you're going to be able to get up into the other building, or it could be locked doors, could be gates,
could have been anything. I didn't know what I was even going into, but I ended up in, I believe, the old boiler rooms and the old heating rooms in the basement of the main wing, and I went up from there.
And what do you find in a building like that, an old abandoned hospital? Is it, you know, a texter asked, has he ever haunted abandoned buildings?
Edgewater Hospital is actually haunted.
They do say it's haunted?
Yes. There was a nurse who was murdered, not in the hospital, but in the city of Chicago. Someone murdered her, I think stabbed her a bunch of times, and put her between two mattresses and lit it on fire.
Oh, Jesus.
And the saying goes that if you're in the hospital, people have seen her ghosts. Even when the hospital was open, people say they would see her ghosts. Her ghost would push stuff over, and they would say that. You could actually look up the story. I forget her name, but if you just look up Edgewater Hospital Haunted, I'm sure it'll come
up. I imagine you'd see a few stories. By the way, when we were telling the basement crossing, this is at night, and it's pitch black down there, and all he has is a flashlight, right?
Yes.
Oh, dude. That sounds haunted right there. I mean, that's just terrible. Oh, okay.
It is terrifying. It was terrifying my first time, but then you get used to being in the places.
And then do you ever feel creeped out? Did you ever see the nurse? Did you ever like feel like you heard things? Or
there have been interesting parts where I'm on floors and you hear something all like probably a couple rooms down and everyone stops and freezes and like they look at each other like, did you hear that? Did you hear that? And we all look at each other and say, yes. And we kind of wait for a second and see what's going on. But usually nothing ever comes from it.
Is it generally like a rat or something like that?
Generally a rat, you know, dripping water scares us a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, just you know, it's a building rotting. Things creak.
Yeah. What's the scariest thing that you've seen in an abandoned building? Have you ever stumbled upon a person or floor starts giving way, things like that?
There's actually a person that lives in an abandoned building in South Chicago. I won't say the building.
Sure.
But I was exploring there one time, and all of a sudden this guy walks up to me. He goes, are you Mike Kinch?
Like, are you serious? The guy knew your name?
I swear to God, he knew my name. I was like, yeah, I'm Mike Kinch. How do you know me? He's like, oh, I read your post online. This was back when I did the post about Edgewater.
Okay.
And he's like, I read about Edgewater, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know about me? Like, where do you live? He's, I live here. This is where I live in this building. And he knows the building pretty well. He knows, like, all the abandoned buildings in Chicago. So he was a pretty interesting person to meet, kind of gave me a tour of the building.
Why does he live in the building? And how does he have online access if he's living in an abandoned building?
I asked him why he lives in the building. He says he prefers it. He said he can live in a house. He can get an apartment if he wants, but he prefers it for some reason.
He has a job?
Yes, he does have a job.
How does he shower?
I don't know.
Because there wasn't running water in the building, right?
No, there's no running water in the building.
How does he heat? Or does he just, like, layer?
Just layer. Blankets, I would assume. Just like anyone squatting.
Oh, my God. That is wild.
Yeah, but, he used to live there for a couple of years. And I don't know if you've seen a couple of years ago, they did, like, a documentary. There was also a guy who lived at the Damon Silos.
Really?
Yeah, they did a big documentary about him. I forget his name. At one point he had his own little house basically built. He had flowers he was planting outside. He had like this greenhouse he built. He was living self-sustaining.
And eventually he was run out of there by people?
Eventually he just disappeared. I'm sure he was just run out by the police after he became popular.
Yeah, no kidding. Have you ever been to a truly haunted place, or do you ever like have you found a abandoned mental institution or things that where people would really be freaked out?
I have been to an abandoned mental institution in the Chicagoland area recently. One closed in the north side of Chicagoland.
Okay.
And it's this big complex. It's like three wings. It's a crazy, it still has a power on, but it's been closed for 10 years, which is a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
So you walk through the halls and everything's decaying on the walls, but the lights are still flickering and you could turn the lights on and off. Music still works on the pianos and stuff. The drinking fountains even work still.
You drink water on them?
No.
Okay. But are you creeped out when you're in a mental institution? Do you think about that at all? Like,
yeah, of course. I think about, you know, the people that were there before. Yeah. You could see the rooms where they would lock people in, basically.
Yeah.
That was creepy to see in the dentist. There was a dentist chair.
Ugh.
Very creepy kind of area. It's definitely give off weird vibes.
Are you surprised at – I'm always surprised when I see the photos of how much stuff is left behind in these buildings, that there's actually furniture and, like, documents or dental equipment, like, as if people left, like, in a rush, like, mm-hmm. like the bombs are coming, we have to abandon, and then nobody ever came back.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was actually – a lot of the high schools and grade schools around the area, you'll go in them, and they'll have – a room piled with textbooks. And you know how expensive college textbooks are now to me, especially as well. But they have rooms piled with maybe 300-400 textbooks.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy to see that. They have, you know, the old 2000-era computers everywhere. You see those all the time.
Tell us real quick about the Mexico estate. So you said internationally you have done some urban exploring. So you were in Mexico in Zihuatanejo.
Yes, in Zihuatanejo, Mexico. That's the state of Guerrero. I explored Arturo Durazo's estate.
Okay. Who is Arturo Durazo?
He was a Mexican police, I'm not sure if he's a chief or commander,
okay,
back in the 70s and 80s.
And so why would you, so it's not a Mexican police commander, shouldn't have that great of a...
No, yeah, you wouldn't expect a Mexican police chief to have...
An estate,
but yeah. He also had two more.
Okay, how, what's the rumor about how he acquired that?
So the rumor has it that his monthly income was equated to roughly $1,300 US. Although taking bribes from his police force and going through extortion, racketeering,
dealing with the cartel,
yeah, letting them use routes to probably travel shipments.
Right.
He created this giant empire. And actually, at one point, he had the president promote him to a 4-star general, even though he had no previous military experience, because he actually went to grade school at the president at the time.
Who was the president? It wasn't Vicente Fox, was it?
No, it was not.
Was it for him? Okay, so this guy's got three estates, he's got all this money, and then what happens? Does he get busted?
Yes, he eventually gets busted, and he runs for a while. I think he ended up in south of Mexico, and eventually he was at an airport or something, and he eventually got caught extradited to the U.S. and he served less than 10 years, I believe. He got out and then he died of cancer
a couple years later. But so he had these estates that haven't been resold or repurposed as of yet. There's one in Zihuatanejo that's abandoned, but you said there was a security guard there.
Yes, there's a security guard hired by the government just to guard the property, make sure no one comes in, steals anything.
Mm-hmm. But for a little friendly favor, the security guard lets you in.
Yeah, he'll give you a tour for 200 pesos.
Uh-huh. And so did he walk around with you guys in there or just let you through the gate?
He let us through the gate and kind of just let me walk around, roam freely and take pictures.
Uh-huh.
You could also ask him questions. He knew a lot about the building because he's probably there every day.
Yeah.
But he knew a lot about the building and could tell you a lot about the history of it as well. It was pretty cool.
Do you know how long it has been abandoned?
I do not know how long it's been abandoned. I'm guessing since at least 1995.
You would think that the Mexican government would claim the property and then resell it. Try to give it to somebody to have somebody buy it.
They did originally take the property. They seized it from him when he first got arrested. And they own the property. They haven't put it up for sale. I believe they tried to donate it to a nearby college, but they didn't even want to accept it. The stigma around the property is almost that it's haunted or it's satanic.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. So now there's just security guard and you walking around taking pictures.
Yep.
Do you have a website, an Instagram account? Is there a place that people who want to see your photos can go?
So currently I post a lot of my photos onto my Instagram account.
Okay. And how do they follow you on Instagram?
My name is MikeMan902. MikeMan902.
MikeMan902?
Yes.
On Instagram. And then you can see the photos, and will you share a couple with Jess when she puts up the podcast of this?
Yeah,
she can,
of course.
Put a couple online. All right. Mike Kinch, an urban explorer. I got a text from somebody who says, it is irresponsible to have this urban explorer on the radio. He is irresponsible, stupid teenager. Where are his parents? Which you can imagine you probably hear a lot of. But
of
you said earlier that your parents, as long as you're being safe and smart, which people could argue, Mike, you're not. You're crawling through frozen water. You're standing on a 70-story building. We don't want to end up reading about you like this poor guy who fell off the London house last week.
You have to be definitely very safe about it.
Yeah. So please be safer about it, because I know you think you're being safe, but crawling across frozen ice in the middle of winter in an abandoned hospital basement, by definition, probably not safe. A little risky. But I know that that's part of it, though, right? Because if it wasn't a little risky, it wouldn't be as exciting, would it?
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you, sir. Stay safe, and we hope we can have you back again. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Mike Kinch. Follow him on Instagram at MikeMan902. News is next, 720 WGN. Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. Astros took a 2-1 lead last night in the series. very good twist of events, at least as far as I'm concerned. I am, Raj, I'm rooting for the Astros. What about you?
Actually, I'm rooting for the Dodgers. Two reasons.
Okay.
One, my cousin and aunt, who live in L.A. and are big Dodgers fans, they need to win this year because we beat them last year. And she's still sore about it. plus, I'd like to know that the Cubs lost to the best team in baseball.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see those arguments. Here's the thing. The Astros have never won the World Series.
Yeah, so?
So, I'd like them to win. Okay. I'm going to go for the Astros. Plus, their jerseys look good. The Dodgers have very classic jerseys.
Yeah, I don't like those jerseys.
Yeah, I like the new ones. Yeah, I like them.
All right. Plus, did you see, and I saw it, and I didn't read the story, but apparently 3 years ago, someone wrote a Sports Illustrated cover story that the Astros would win the World Series in 2017.
I believe that because of their rebuild and stuff, right?
Very interesting. I haven't read the article, haven't had time yet, but I saw it on my Twitter feed, and I think I'll go back and read it when I have time later today.
Sounds good. First, you're going to have to do the news, sir. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here's the news now. Here's Roger Badish. Hey, Rog, while I'm doing this, Jess is trying to find it too, but can you pull up the audio? Do you have the raw audio of Donald Trump with the kids from the White House?
Yeah. I saw that earlier.
It's like a minute and a half long. If you get the raw of that, I'd like that. In about 60 seconds after I ask, do you struggle getting deep, restful sleep? If you think about it, when was the last time you replaced your pillow? Your tossing and turning may be a result of that flat, worn-out pillow that you've been sleeping on for years. So try MyPillow and join the millions of people who are getting the best sleep of their lives. You can try one out absolutely risk-free. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-299-9579. MyPillow is offering their signature four-pack special at 50% off. Just use promo code WGN at checkout. They're even going to throw in free shipping. On top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident that you'll love your new pillow, they'll give you a 60-night money-back guarantee. So sleep on it. If you don't believe it's the absolute best pillow out there, return it for a full refund. Try a MyPillow. See why customers have described them as life-changing. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com and use promo code WGN. Any chance you have that?
Yeah, I do. And hold on a second.
This will be the first ever installment.
Have you ever looked for a hotel?
We don't want that yet.
No. Don't play the ad.
I'm trying not to.
This is gonna be
they've broken it up. The one I saw earlier was the entire full length of it from when they actually walked before they even got around the desk when he just starts talking.
Yeah. And I'm not. All right, kids, come on around.
I'm not seeing that right now. If you'll hold on for 4, 3, 2, and 1.
I cannot believe the media produced such beautiful children. How the media did this, I don't know. Come on over here. That's beautiful. These are beautiful, wonderful children. Oh, you're going to grow up to be like your parents? Don't answer. That can only get me in trouble, that question.
Yeah.
You have wonderful parents, right? So Halloween is special? Special? For you, that's a very scary outfit, huh?
Everybody's scared of it.
That's very scary. You all having a good time? What is this? Oh.
Here comes the candy.
Well, I don't think they want any gifts or candy, right? Are you ready? So this is from the White House. See what that says?
Ooh, they're fancy kisses.
Who likes this?
No, that's
good. Well, you have no weight problems. That's the good news, right? Good. So you take out whatever you need, okay? If you want some for your friends, take them. We have plenty.
So there it was. That's all we need. So you have no weight problems, right? That's the good news. He's not. There's like four kids on that side of the desk. He's handing out the candy. So you have no weight problems. That's the good news. I know that we don't bring up weight issues to kids. It was such a dumb thing to say, sure. But honest to God, it's a matter of him just looking at the kids. He's handing out. He's trying to figure out how to talk to these kids. You know that Donald Trump and kids, that's not his thing. He's not a baby whisperer like Obama was. This is kind of a one of those things the president has to do that is probably for him somewhat uncomfortable. He makes a joke about, you know, if people are getting upset about the joking about the kids being good looking, how did the press pull that off? That's not a big deal. That's funny. He has a very adversarial relationship with the press. I think it's so odd that the press's kids are coming into the Oval Office in the first place. But they are. So, okay, that's a little perk of putting up with all you put up with there by being at the White House, I guess. Your kids get to do that. But just it was such a, to me, just such an aside of, oh, well, you don't have, you know, here you go. You like that? Oh, you don't have to worry about weight at least. Because you're kids. He's not trying to scar anybody for life. It was not a big deal. And what frustrates me about it is there are so many things he does that are a big deal. And when we do this, if we're going to go make a big deal about this and give him... Oh, I'm sorry, Roger. I'm sorry. I turned you down because I was fading out the audio.
Oh, I was.
I faded out the audio because I had what I needed.
I lost my voice.
No, it was me.
All right.
But we if we start making a big deal about this... Mm-hmm. That gives ammunition to look how the press treats him. Look at the fake news. Right. Look at what they do. Blah, 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 blah. And that's why we let this go, people. Don't make a big deal about this. And there's headlines about it and all this stuff. And there's where the fake news media, they got to make a big deal because he just made some simple comment to a child, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This is being blown out of proportion and is stupid. And there is so much going on that don't give him ammunition to say fake news or the media's out to get me, because that's what we're doing right here.
Yeah, he the first time I saw this, I actually didn't hear it. I watched it with the captions, and it gave a different feel to it when I saw it with the captions. I'm thinking, oh, this is not going to go over well. But now listening to him and watching who he was looking at or who he wasn't looking at.
Yeah.
It was a very casual. It wasn't meant mean.
And I don't think he's even looking at somebody
he's not.
When he says
he had
it.
His
he's
eyes
just
on
like
the
handing
desk.
It out. Oh, at least you don't have to worry about weight because you're kids.
And that's the first time he had seen the candy. There's a shot of him actually looking at the candy. What the heck am I handing to these kids? He's thinking, you know,
why do they get it? I get two scoops. I get two of these.
Exactly. Now, earlier you heard his comment to the young Japanese child.
Well,
that's
where I was so scared this is going to go bad. When the one kid says she's Japanese,
right.
I think, and then
she was crying. He says, "Why are you crying?"
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking because, again, the first time and we didn't have it on this clip because it was edited. NBC News, who I got the clip on their site, edited that part out.
OK.
The original piece that I saw was the full piece. And so, again, seeing the caption and watching what he's doing. And I'm hearing the bad tone in his voice as I'm putting his voice in my head,
reading
the caption.
Right.
But now seeing how he was with the, the weight thing, it couldn't have been bad because what he's saying, oh, she's Japanese. Oh, I'm going to Japan next week. I'm going to Japan next week.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
I heard that part.
Yeah.
And like the he's trying to get them all to come around the desk.
Right.
And the one's crying, oh, you're crying? Come here. And then the kid doesn't come there.
Right.
And he's like, okay. And then the one child next to him, I think it was a girl, says, oh, he or she's Japanese.
Right, right.
And he goes, oh, you're Japanese? I'm going to Japan in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, trying to make him feel.
And that was it.
Yeah.
It was not a big deal.
Right.
And like I said, you know, Donald Trump, love him or hate him, he's probably not the most fun around kids guy.
It's
just not his thing.
He didn't seem real comfortable.
He didn't. He's like, all right, okay, you know, come on around.
Plus,
come on,
he's
let's get this
surrounded
picture.
By these kids, and he's in the chair at the desk. He's trapped.
Yeah.
You know, but the other kids on the other side that he was talking to about the weight thing, they were all smiling and happy.
Yeah,
and,
I think the room loosened up as it went on, and now he's passing out some chocolates, and it's cool. The most stunning thing to me, Roger, about us listening to that piece, was there anything that really stuck out to you?
That stuck out?
As we just listened to that?
Now that I've seen it a second time, no. I mean, as far as something awkward or that we haven't already talked about?
No, not related to Donald Trump at all. How about the shutters going on
the cameras? Oh, the cameras are horrible. Yeah.
Are we not in a digital age? Are these all really film cameras that we're
using? No, they're all digital cameras.
Well, then why don't they turn off the part that makes the noise?
Because you can't. It does make that noise on those.
You have to be able to turn that off. That's high
quality. No, it's a mechanical click thing.
That's not like a digital noise. That's the actual shutter clicking inside a digital camera.
Yeah.
It still does all that?
Yes.
Even in those digital cameras?
Yes.
All right.
We're talking about the real expensive stuff you and I want but can't afford.
And they can't make that silent, huh?
No.
We can put a man on the moon. We can't be in the Oval Office without hearing a shutter go off 18,000 times.
Now, here's the other thing. I want to throw this out because I was watching this also, watching video of Sarah Huckabee in the press conference where her daily press briefing,
right,
where she says, all right, we have to end this because, you know, president's going to see some kids, blah, blah, blah. And if you see some of the shots of the reporters when they're asking questions, you can see some of the reporters holding their kids. They're getting ready. This was a planned thing. They're getting ready to go in.
It was take your Halloween kid to work day.
Exactly. This was all planned. This was not something like, hey, your reporters. How are the reporters' kids going to be there if this wasn't planned?
I don't know, and I don't. Well, it was, from what I understood, mm-hmm. What the guy said when we were doing Crosstalk with Patty, it was planned that they were bringing their kids to the White House. It wasn't planned that they would actually meet the president.
It had to have been planned because they brought this huge box of candy with the presidential seal on every single
Sarah
one of them.
Maybe Sarah and the office planned it, but the kids in the press didn't know maybe that the president was going to do it. And maybe they have, listen, at Halloween, they might have presidential sealed candy because there's some point they're handing it out, or who knows what. I believe that it wasn't necessarily planned, like the press knew that their kids were going to get to do this or anything like that. I don't know. It does seem like a weird little conflict of interest because you're covering this president, you're covering him hard.
Right.
You know, and then to bring your kid in, you know, can you imagine if Katie Tour had a child and she's there with, and then, you know, he'd be like, so you're the spawn of Katie Tour, huh? You know, it'd be very tough for them
to
do that.
Full disclosure.
Yeah.
When I was working for Q101 as a reporter at City Hall, I was invited by Mayor Byrne to the state dinner of the Queen of Egypt.
Cool.
The First Lady of Egypt. And, you know, this is pretty much the same thing. You bring your kids in to see the president, and you get invited to a state dinner. This was not the thing that I went to was not a press event, you know, and none of the other reporters were invited from City Hall.
Mm.
This is before, a couple of years before I went to work for.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so it kind of feels like the same thing when you say, well, it's conflict of interest.
Was there an ethical question on whether you should attend?
Not back then. I didn't think there was. Nobody said anything to me from NBC, which owned the radio station at the time.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, as a reporter, even if you're not working it, good for you to be there. Good for you to see what's going on, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's different than getting to bring your kids.
Well,
you know,
but I mean, the kids already there. Right. If you said this would bring your kids to.
Well, it's weird that you're bringing your kids to dress up to go to the White House anyways.
And then sit with you at work all day. I mean,
I imagine they just came for a short amount of time or something. I can't imagine the kid was there from 8 in the morning. Don't worry. At 4 o'clock this afternoon, you get a tour of the East Room. It's well worth it. I'm sure they just kind of brought him in for the afternoon press briefing or whatever. But it does seem odd to do because it's not your standard. Take your kid to work. It's. You know, the separation of church and state and freedom of the press and all these issues going on. I don't know. It just seems I wonder if this is I've never seen this before. So I don't know. Is this a tradition?
I don't know. Well, don't they allow them in for the egg roll out on the for Easter?
Well, there's an egg roll, but that's not the press's kids.
It could be. There's a lot of kids that are invited.
I've never heard that it was. Maybe the press do.
Maybe it was never made a big deal of. I think everything this president does, my God, blinking his eyes, taking a breath.
It does get blown up.
Exactly.
It does get blown up. the Melania body double stories
were the greatest ones from last week. Let's,
now we're really going.
No.
Is Melania leaving him? Well, now that there's a body double, you can bet she is.
Is she wearing a wig? Is she not wearing a wig? Is she? Oh, please, come on. We got more important issues to deal with.
That was too funny.
I'm sorry. I just.
Now, a texter is yelling at me that we're here bashing Trump.
We're not bashing.
We're defending him.
Oh, my God.
Tape it and save it because it's probably never going to happen again. But we're defending your president right now. That's what we've been doing. Even when we're defending him, it looks like we're accusing him.
Well, see, you know, you've already been tagged.
I'll find something else in a minute.
There's
no doubt about it.
There's never a loss.
Well, Spina, enjoy this while you can, because supposedly Robert Mueller's first indictment came down on Friday, and we'll hear about it on Monday.
Well, by Monday, sure.
By Monday we should
hear. Yeah, they are supposed to have notified the lawyers. They've already notified the lawyers involved, and they could by Monday, or supposed to by Monday, serve the warrant on the person or persons that they are for.
And there was also a lot of really fun righteous indignation this past week. I didn't read the stories as in-depth as I will at some point, but we're talking about the dossier that was prepared about Trump's dealings with Russia. And it gets revealed that Hillary Clinton and the DNC paid for it. And so people are freaking out like, oh, my God, they lied about it. They're this, they're that, they're this, they're that. And the first reaction to that is, well, okay, if they were denying it all along, that's bad. But there is opposition research done on everyone.
By both parties.
By both parties.
Right.
And I'm sure it gets way more salacious than that. It's just that things don't get revealed unless they feel they can really stick. So this isn't surprising at all that they would have paid for any of this. Now, if they were lying about it or being nefarious about whatever, then maybe you got something to yell at them about. But then it comes out that the research was picked up from the RNC. The RNC originally was paying for this research that led to the dossier during the primary election cycle because the RNC didn't want Trump to be the nominee.
Right, so you've got your own party.
Your own party
investigating
is doing the
you.
Then once he gets the nomination, they stop.
Right.
So then Hillary says, well, we'll keep paying for it. And so there you go.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, so everybody stopped their righteous indignation about this person did this, this person did this. Let's face a basic truth. Both parties will dig as deep into the mud and the weeds as they can and slime each other up to discredit each other and make things bad for each other.
That's
There's
politics.
No doubt about it. That's how it works.
Yeah.
There's no we're good and we don't do this or we're bad and they're this and whatever. They're both slimy as hell. And of course they did, because then it's coming out with Julian Assange. There was something else about WikiLeaks, right? That the Republicans
he had been contacted
were,
to
by the Republicans to get her emails or something like that
to categorize or you know kind of take all the emails and find some kind of pattern to it and put it in order for them. It's politics, people. It happens.
Is.
It happens locally. It happens statewide, district, county, nationally. It happens overseas. It happens in other countries. This is what politics is.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Unfortunately.
And think if you think about it, the listeners, you know what political advertising looks like when campaigns start. You got two different types of advertising that happens almost immediately. One is for a candidate that's not really well known, and you see these real homespun stories about their families and about this and about that and how wonderful they are, and the families talk about them, their former teachers talk about them, blah, blah, blah. And then you have ads for maybe politicians who are a little more known, and those ads attack the opposing candidates for that spot. And this always, if you look at it, those negative campaigns start, those negative ads start, and then as we get closer to the vote, those negative ads switch to a positive, like, here's Bob Smith, and he has worked for you hard, and blah, 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 blah. So now you've attacked your opponent, and now you praise yourself. So this is, I'm sorry, I'm a student of this. My minor is in government from college. I studied this. This is how it happens. No one's bashing anyone. This is politics 101.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all going to get bad. And I don't know. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll do the news. And then there was an interesting story I was reading today. Roger, we're going to teach you, in case you're curious, how to be the most interesting person in the room.
I have been wanting... Oh, man, I'm so glad you're doing this. I'm all excited now.
Roger's all tingly. We'll see if he can get through the newscast next, 720 WGN. This week, Chicago's Best has everything from ghosts to grub. Elliot and Brittany are visiting those hot spots with a spooky past. All new Chicago's Best haunted restaurants. Now that's a different spin on Chicago's Best. That's Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. What a good little tie-in for Halloween. Yeah. Chicago's Best haunted restaurants.
I want the one where Slimer is eating.
From Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
With all the hot dogs in his mouth?
Stuffed in his mouth. Hey, this must be a good place. Slimer eats here.
I don't know that Slimer's bar is real high and where he's willing to visit, but okay, sure. All right, 4:31 in the morning. Let's check the news headlines. Here's your Roger Badish. That's our 4:38 bumper music. Get down, everybody.
It's a spooky, funky.
Mabu Bala with you for 22 more minutes before Orion Samuelson kicks off the morning show on your Saturday morning here at WGN Radio. As Mr. Badish was mentioning, the Wildcats play this afternoon. Tough Michigan State team coming to town.
Yeah.
If the Cats can somehow win that game, mm-hmm. that is a season changer.
Oh, yeah.
They will be poised to head to first of all, I think they only need one more win to be bowl eligible.
Okay.
So it would make them bowl eligible. And by beating that good of a team, it would get them in line to maybe start thinking about a really good bowl game and not like, you know, the Motor City Bowl or something like that.
Or the generic cereal crunch bowl.
The generic cereal crunch bowl. Is that a new one this year?
I think so. Yeah.
Also in Detroit, by the way. So let's cheer on those Wildcats this afternoon. There's also a good, who is it, Ohio State and Penn State? Notre Dame has a good game. There's a lot of good college football today.
We have Notre Dame is hosting NC State.
Yeah, and NC State's like 14 and Notre Dame's 9.
Okay. We've got Penn State at Ohio State.
Both ranked really high, I believe.
Let's see, Minnesota, Iowa?
Yeah, I don't care about the rest of them.
Okay.
But
okay,
there's some really good ones.
Salukis at South Dakota. Come on, man.
Woo,
hey, did you hear the news?
That's a barn burner.
Do you know who is already bowl eligible?
Northern Illinois.
You got it.
You know how I know it?
How?
My son's got the damn game on last night. I'm like, Jack,
oh, really?
There's a World Series game and an NFL game on.
Yeah.
Why are we watching Northern Illinois versus Eastern Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Kid will watch anything. Get up Saturday morning, I'll go home, I'm going to take my nap, I'm going to get up, and then I'm going to walk downstairs. You know what Jack's going to have on?
All right.
Premier League Soccer.
Nothing wrong with that.
I do it. I'll actually sit and watch that stuff.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Now he's watching golf.
I like golf. Yeah, especially now. Yeah. Golf is like on at night.
Because it's overseas
golf? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
And
there's
now
around the world.
I'm
a lot
excited
of
about Amazon Prime.
Yes.
Because now they've got a channel of Thursday night football games. But not live. It's like after the game, suddenly it's there and it's free.
After the game's over, you can watch it for free?
Yeah.
Why do you want to watch it at midnight?
But I don't have access to Thursday night football. I don't have.
I think you do.
Cable.
I thought it's also on CBS now. Is it only on? Are you sure? You're sure?
I don't think it's on CBS.
It is on the NFL Network, but I thought that they're also on CBS. No?
Maybe not. No, I think it's on the network because I bowl on Thursday nights.
Well, it's definitely on the NFL Network, but I thought it was also.
No.
Well, you should pay attention because Hulu, listen, the NFL is, I want to say the World Series is being streamed on YouTube. The NFL had a game earlier this year one of those London games, like the first one of the year, was only on Yahoo. It wasn't on television. It was on Yahoo.
Yeah.
And they're doing more and more stuff like that. I think the games might be being broadcast on Twitter. So they're finding
Twitter,
these different packages.
Golf now on Thursdays and Fridays, and even Saturday mornings, the first maybe six holes are broadcast live on Twitter. They're already on the Golf Channel.
So interesting.
And they're live on Twitter, and then they keep telling you if you want to keep watching it, you got to sign them. PGA has an app that you can pay for,
right?
You know, and get it live on your mobile devices,
just like MLB does.
Yeah, and sometimes it's live free. It depends on the tournament.
Yeah.
And I used to have there would be a baseball game on. Cubs would be on Channel 9. And I'd be sitting there watching it, and I'd have the golf on my little dinky phone.
Yeah.
And I was a happy camper.
A texter from 847 says, sleet is splattering on the windshield in Rochelle. So be safe if you're out there traveling early this morning. We had a call from Switzerland coming in right after we take this break, 720 WGN. Texter says, Matt, don't diss Iowa. LOL. Iowa plays Minnesota this week at home. So go Hawkeyes. And 262 Roger says the NFL Thursday night game was on CBS this past week.
But I don't think it's on every week.
I think you're right. I think some weeks it's on just NFL Network, but maybe later in the season they start getting back to having it on all the time. Speaking of Chicago sports, Wally is called in all the way from Switzerland. Hey, Wally, how are you doing?
Hey, Matt, I'm doing well, thank you.
What's going on in Switzerland?
The show sounds great.
Thank you.
The show sounds great.
You wouldn't happen to be catching it off the ionosphere. Are you actually listening online, I'm guessing?
I'm listening online, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't found a radio that can get WGN over here, but comes through loud and clear on the internet, which is great.
Excellent. Well, what's going on?
So just getting ready for a day. I'm 7 hours ahead of you, so it's closing in on noon for me here. And it looks like a beautiful day. I'm about an hour outside of Zurich, and it's about 5 degrees. So what is that, 43 Fahrenheit?
Ugh. Okay. Doesn't sound awesome, but much like here.
No.
What are you doing?
It's very similar. It's usually very similar to Chicago, which is funny.
Yeah, no kidding. What are you doing in Switzerland, Wally?
Working over here. I've got meetings for 2 weeks.
Oh, so you're just there traveling a little bit.
I'm just there traveling, yes. Yeah, I don't live here, but it's a beautiful, beautiful country, and it's nice to be able to keep in touch with Chicago through WGN. So listening to your comments on President Trump and the kids and the candy and all that, and just trying to keep in touch with sports. I got up very early this morning and heard the end of the Hawks game, which I wish I'd kind of slept to, I think.
Yeah.
But,
they started out really hot. Now they're struggling a little bit, but you know, it's a long season. They'll get it going. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Let's keep the faith.
Exactly.
Are you going to try to catch the Bears game this weekend?
Is it a noon game?
It's a noon game, so yeah, so it'll be, 9 o'clock or 7 o'clock at night there, right?
It would be, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. I probably will try to get it, but I'm going to have to go to a different station, of course, for that.
Yeah.
Although I did listen, I was in China a couple weeks ago, and I listened to the Bears post game with Kaz. Yeah.
It's better than the game.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you don't have to listen to the game if you can listen to those three.
You get a sense
about 30 seconds into the show whether the Bears are lost. And how well they did.
Wally, could you find the game possibly on television over there or only on the internet?
You know what was funny? During when I was in China, there was a station that had, I think it was one of the ESPN stations that was at the hotel outside of Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to see all the Cubs games, which was amazing.
Oh,
but I
cool.
haven't found anything here that has U.S. sports, so I'll just have to keep looking.
Excellent. Wally, I got to take a break. Hold on for 1 second. I want Jess to get some information from you. We've got Max coming up with the morning show next, 720 WGN. Check in with Max Armstrong in just a couple of minutes. This was an interesting story that came out this week in Newsweek about what happens after you die. Roger, here's one that's weird to think about at the very least. Few things seem more absolute than death, but when it comes to actually pinpointing the moment when a person goes from alive to dead, drawing the line is a little more fraught. The current medical definition of death is when the heart stops beating. In an interview with Live Science, NYU Langone Samparnia, a pulmonologist who studies resuscitation, notes that from that point, it takes up to 20 seconds before brain waves are no longer detectable. According to Parnia, this sets off a longer chain of processes that leads to brain death. If you manage to restart the heart, which is what CPR attempts to do, you'll gradually start to get the brain functioning again. The longer you're doing CPR, those brain cell death pathways are still happening. They're just happening at a slightly slower rate, Parnia told Live Science. In cases of cardiac arrest, doctors usually are not able to restore blood flow to the brain. That's why the experiences of people who are successfully resuscitated are so fascinating. The Live Science story taps into a vast history of efforts to define death and to understand what are commonly called near-death experiences. In a 2014 study, physicians interviewed over 100 people who had gone into cardiac arrest and been successfully resuscitated. 39% of them described a perception of awareness, even if they couldn't recount specifics. There was another story about this earlier this week that talked about that when you die, your brain is alive long enough that people that they think that you might even be able to realize you are dying, like knowing I am dying, my body has died, like a good 20 seconds or so of your brain figuring out what's going on.
Makes sense.
We'll figure out what's going on with Max Armstrong. That's my really good segue into the morning show with Max coming up next. Thank you so much for staying up later with us, everybody. We'll be back at 2 a.m. next Saturday morning.